Hey there, we're the West Slot Pirates and welcome to the show. We're here to share thoughts on Northwestern athletics and college sports with thoughts and analysis from the visceral to the statistical. We run our tailgate with the red pirate flag flying high above as we give no quarter, especially the fourth. I'm Sam Walter.
I'm John Lacombe.
And I'm Eric Scaspo.
We are coming down the stretch here of basketball season.
Boy, are we to go.
Yeah. 1 week to go, two more games left in the regular season, and then off to the Big Ten tournament. And I got to ask, how are you guys feeling? You guys feeling okay?
No, I'm stressed, man. I'm stressed.
Not at all.
My ankle is literally bothering me right now. So that's, you know, me and everyone else, you know, having lower body injuries. The injury luck that we are facing down the stretch is just brutal.
It is, and I think we're all trying to balance all of these different things at once, and it's like you feel like you're doing the spinning plates thing because, I mean, as we record, Northwestern sits alone in third in the Big Ten out of 14 teams, and it's so crazy, but I think based on the way last season, like, this is how it went last year, too. Northwestern rolled into that last game against Rutgers last year, staring at either second or 10th? Was that what it was?
That's what it was, either second or 10th.
I forgot about that.
based on the results, and it's like, I mean, it can't really go like that. I mean, I suppose the swings are still the same way, and it's like Northwestern's played really well. Northwestern is still very much like in everyone's like should be in. It's like a question of seeding and everything, but... Right. The fact that there are still two left, and then this injury piece too, that I'll be honest, if Jordan Travis hadn't happened, I think it reframes a lot of the conversation. And I know it's a different sport, but I think so many people are like, we have seen how boneheaded a committee can get on something like this when the stakes are so high. And I think it gets everyone's nerves up a little bit. And right, so I mean, it's all these things. And it's like, it's not like the team hasn't been playing great basketball. In fact, they have played some of the greatest basketball we've ever seen over parts of this stretch. And right, we're all trying to balance all of this at once.
Yeah, I mean, Ty Berry being done for the season, Ryan Langborg missing a few games, Matt Nicholson going down. As we record this on Monday night, we don't know how injured he is. Will he be back against Michigan State? Or, I mean, the way he went down, I mean, like I said, I say this every week, not a doctor, but like, you know, with only 1 week left in the regular season.
Right. We have to be realistic.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
I mean,
what happens if we're missing our big man, you know, down the stretch and into postseason play?
It's problematic. It's problematic for the team if they can't get somebody back, and some of that is just the depth on the bench. I think, I mean, here's where I sit. I think unequivocally Northwestern is in, and it's like I think the Jordan Travis Florida State comparison. I don't think it's even in the same stratosphere. The NCAA tournament has a history of changing seedings because of injuries, not leaving teams out. And the reality is that Boo Booey is appointment viewing. Everyone and their mother wants Boo Booey in the tournament. They want to see Boo Booey in the tournament. It's going to happen. Does that mean Northwestern is an 11 seed? Maybe. Do I care? No. I get that some people do, that like it's, you know, Northwestern's being underseeded, underappreciated. There's some comparisons to Wisconsin, some comparisons to Michigan State, et cetera.
Well, let's not get started on Wisconsin just yet.
I get it. Here, I mean, like, I think all this stuff is eye of the beholder. We are always, the three of us and many of you out there, we're all always going to be biased towards Northwestern, and that's fine. Like, I don't think it's even worth spending the oxygen on it because Northwestern's in. I think we'd all feel a lot better if they won a game out of the stretch. I said I'm really anxious and I'm stressed. What I'm stressed about is Northwestern getting into, you know, a double bye in the Big Ten tournament, getting into the NCAA tournament, and not being able to notch a win in those awesome opportunities because of the depth and the injuries. I think you know, I'll say we have heard that it looks good for Langborg to be back for Michigan State, which would be really great if that's true.
Yeah, seriously.
We don't know if it is or not. We won't know until Collins says it, and maybe even until he walks onto the court. But it is a frightening prospect that they could, you know, lose out the next four games. That would be a huge bummer. That's what I'm anxious about because of the opportunity. I don't like Northwestern's into the tournament, like unequivocally, in my opinion.
I think too, like another piece of it, if you know, in terms of the glass half full way of looking at all this, in terms of right, like the resume and the fact that Northwestern absolutely, and the announcers talked about it during the game, being like the, you know, put it straight, like the, you know, put it straight to the color guy and was like, do you think Northwestern's in right now? And he was like, well, no one wants to lose out. Like, that's never a good look. But yes, I think regardless, they're still in. So, like, it's like, Scuzz is like, your view is like, there are many people who hold that view. I think the other piece in the glass half full, too, is Northwestern's played so effing well over the past two games. And I know the second game was a loss. That's a loss where Northwestern played the entire second half without three starters from the first half of this game. And if Iowa isn't literally lighting the ball on fire with how hot they are shooting the ball, Northwestern wins that basketball game.
Well, it's such a bad matchup too, right? Iowa pushing the pace, racing down the court with the short bench. Just a terrible, terrible matchup with those injuries relative to the first half of the season.
Right, and that was, a valiant effort by this Cats team, you know, a severely wounded Cats team. And then before that, I mean, this was a game that like no less than Dave Ennett after the game was like, this is one of the special ones I'm going to remember for a long, long time. And he's absolutely right. I mean, that win at Maryland is one of the great Northwestern wins. And for Chris Collins, one of the best coaching jobs I think any of us have ever seen from him.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely incredible. Like, you know, having the short bench and then just Nick Martinelli. I mean, what else can you say? 27 points for Martinelli and 9 of 14 from the floor, you know, 9 of 10 from the line. Like, he was playing out of his mind.
He was. And that was something where, like, he was hot early and we were all talking about it and being like, you know, is Maryland going to adjust or everything? And he just kept getting Nicky buckets, just kept getting buckets for the entire game. And I mean, that will be remembered as the Nicky buckets game. He walked into that game as Nick Martinelli and walked out as Nicky buckets. And it's a huge, I mean, I think multiple people, and not just because I think there was a couple of statistical similarities, but multiple people compared it to that Derek Pardon Nebraska game, right? Where a guy goes into one game, you feel one way about him, and he leaves, you know, and you just, he'll always be a different player coming out of that game. And that's how it was with Martinelli. But it's like, Northwestern started Blake Smith in this game, right? Like, Northwestern started a walk-on in this game, and he had what all the players after the game agreed was the play of the game. Like, the absolute, like that play where he got the rebound and pulled it down and got the and one as the, you know, the whole bench went bananas. Like, this is the unit that Northwestern went on the road and beat the Maryland Terrapins for a sweep with. And again, this is Chris Collins's apex. Like, this is the best coaching that I think any of us have ever seen from this guy. And this is giving him his flowers. This is the reigning Big Ten coach of the year. And he was incredible. Like, what more could he be doing with this depleted roster that he has right now? He's pulling out all of the stops, and just, it's phenomenal coaching.
The stop I wish he'd pull out a little bit more is Mullins. We haven't seen much of Mullins since the second half of Nebraska after Ty Berry went down. And I get, you know, Blake Smith and his defense is so critical. In fact, in the Maryland game, Blake Smith picked up Jameer Young, you know, three quarters of the way down the court on almost every play. And
like, you, with a plum, like, he was fantastic.
Yes, he was awesome. Now Young he ended up getting 24 points, like half of those coming on free throws. Basically, he was 11 of 12 from the stripe, but Blake did a great job on him. He's a walk-on in his first handful of games playing. Like, he's going to make mistakes, and there's misses here and there. He had a couple misses against Iowa, but again, like, played great. There was the steal he had against Iowa. There was the drive and almost like a scoop and score. Like, he is emerging in just incredible ways. But Justin Mullins is a player who I think has a lot to give, especially on the offensive side where we need it. And maybe his defense isn't up to par for Collins to feel comfortable, but that's like the one spot I feel like the team is so desperate for legs, and we really haven't seen much of him at all the last two games. And it's a little bit of a surprise, but at the same time, you've got to give Collins some credit. To your point, John, he's pulling all the strings. He is getting it done in severely adverse situations where, you know, at the beginning, like, we talked about it a ton the first half of the year, Ty Berry and Ryan Langborg are what would unlock Boo. When they were hitting threes and they were scoring, it would unlock Boo. And Bowie talked about it after Iowa that with Langborg out, with Berry out, the team's much, they're much bigger. That kind of changes the math on the court, but it also means the spacing is different, and it gives Boo a lot less room to operate with. And when, you know, when a defender goes underneath the screen or is a little bit late switching over onto Boo, he just cuts your heart out with his 3-point shooting, which is going to continue, but his opportunities to score have been limited with these other guys out. So I'm, you know, really, really hoping what we've heard is true and Langborg is back on the court. I think it'll do wonders for how Boo can affect the game as well.
It's amazing too, I mean, when you talk about Berry and Langborg, like, you talk about Jameer Young. This is a guy who absolutely torched Northwestern in Welsh Ryan in the first meeting between these two teams this season. And that was with two guys on the court to defend him who weren't available in this game. And obviously, he still scored 24 points, but this is one of the best guards in the conference. And Collins is piecing this together with every piece that he has and trying to figure out how to make this all work. And it is. It's an amazing effort. And I think in terms of the offensive piece of this, I think it really says something that, right, like having to bring a Blake Smith out there, but, and of course, Martinelli's ascendance has been a big part of this, that the team hasn't had trouble, like, finding buckets. As much as the announcers during the Iowa game were trying to conjure this, Northwestern has not had, like, there has been no point where it's like, oh my gosh, where are we getting the buckets from? We know exactly where we're getting our buckets from. The Maryland game was a perfect example. Martinelli had this unbelievable game, but Barnheiser gave you a classic Barnheiser game. 10 boards and drew contact like nobody's business and went 10 for 10 from the free throw line. Just a classic super physical Brooks game. And of course, Boo was like relatively quiet, but I mean, this is Boo Bowie we're talking about, like Boo effing Bowie. Like, this guy is always going to be there for you when you need it most. And I think it was wild though, like in that game, Northwestern went 28 for 31 from the free throw line. Boo shot two of those free throws.
That's wild.
That's at Maryland. That's Nick Martinelli, Brooks Barnheiser, Blake Smith, right? Even Luke Hunger off the bench hitting free throws. Like, those are pressure free throws on the road in a game that the Northwestern really needed. And I mean, it's just like the soul of those guys, the culture of this team, the heart that the team showed out. And it's those kind of things that enable you to be like, look, if it's a situation where we don't have Nicholson for the last two games going forward, like, it sucks, but look at what this team has accomplished, like, game after game. Like, we should always give them the benefit of the doubt because they always seem to find a way to pull it off.
And, you know, coming up to the Wednesday's game against Michigan State, you know, this is a team that, you know, doesn't quite have the size. You know, it is a really good matchup for us. I mean, we did take care of business at Welsh Ryan against them. And, you know, to go on the road, I mean, Breslin is tough. I mean, it's hard to win at Michigan State, but it's like, it's not impossible. You know, Michigan State's on a 3-game losing streak. They lost two games at home to Ohio State and Iowa. So, and then, you know, went to Purdue and got beat. But like, they're, you know, struggling a little bit, but like you look at this, you look at the numbers, you look at the stats, just the team stats between Northwestern and Michigan State, and it is absolutely eerie.
It's crazy.
How identical they are. Both teams averaging 74.4 points per game. Northwestern averaging 69.6 points against, Michigan State 66.5. Both teams are shooting 46% field goal percentage, Michigan State's 46.8. Rebounds, 31.2 for the Cats, 34.4 for Michigan State. Assists per game, 15.8 for the Cats, 16.5 for Michigan State. Blocks, 3.2, 3.9. Steals, 7, 7.1. It is just wild how, at least on the stat line, I mean, they're basically identical. Now, that being said, you know, they are different teams. And, you know, we talked about, you know, all season long how hard it is to win on the road. But, like, Northwestern has 4 Big Ten road wins, which is more than almost everyone in the conference.
Well, and Michigan State's lost a couple games at home. I think, like, where this game is interesting, unlike Iowa, where you had such contrasting styles between Northwestern and Iowa, with Iowa's up-tempo, Northwestern wanted to slow it down. Michigan State and Northwestern are going to play much more similar. Like, Michigan State loves to get out on transition, right? They emphasize rebounds and then fast outlet passes so they can pressure you, but they're not looking to run every time up the court or take quick shots into the clock, etc.
Unlike Iowa,
exactly. So this will be a really interesting game. You know, rebounding, that's been an area that Northwestern has gotten so much better throughout the course of the year. Nicholson's been a huge part of that. If he's unable to go, that is going to be a spot of potential concern. But Michigan State's a team that, they foul a lot. They don't shoot the lights out. It's a reasonable matchup for the Cats, and it's honestly, this is a team that Boo has really enjoyed playing against the last couple of years. I'll just leave it at that. I think even on the front line, like Carson Cooper is roughly the same size as Blake Preston, Maddie Sisko, and Luke Hunger are relatively equivalent. Like, this is, you know, again, even if Maddie can't go, this isn't a game where we're going to get overpowered on the front line like some Michigan States of the past.
Well, and two, like, look, it's not to minimize Michigan State in any way. This is This is a team that's firmly on the bubble, and they're very good. But I think it's important to evaluate, not just considering the game we're about to play, but considering the game we just played, and consider the fact that as of things currently stand, Iowa and Michigan State are on opposite trajectories. And truth. Iowa looked like a team that's on an upward trajectory. That was, I think, one of the things that bothered us about the narrative as it was unfolding during the game. Because when Nicholson went down, it seemed like the announcers adopted this kind of sky is falling mentality that was like, oh my gosh, now where's Northwestern going to get the buckets from? And it's been like, Northwestern's got stacked, like other than Martinelli Boo Booey and Brooks Barnheiser, like Northwestern's got tons of guys out there. That was not the feel of this game at all. No. The feel of this game was that Iowa was white hot shooting the ball. Dix and Sanford were going off as they've been going off. That's why this team's won 4 of their last 5 games. They're hot right now. Them being hot,
You know what's wild though? We shot 53.8% from the floor. They shot 55% from the floor.
Right.
50% from three both ways. So like Iowa was white hot, but we were shooting every bit as good as they were.
And the other thing too is it didn't feel like, oh, Northwestern's getting run off the court because Nicholson being out has, look, I'm not, there are other teams, for example, any team with a dominant physical large forward is going to be real trouble for us right now, because we've got 15 fouls from our bigs to give, and we're going to give all 15 of them, and the first 5 of those are Matt Nicholson, and I think we're all aware of that. That's a big problem to have to deal with. That wasn't how the Iowa game went at all. They had 2 guys shooting the cover off the ball. Like, that's what was going on. And it was like, our guys were D'ing up on him. Dix just, that guy can get his own shot. And if he's hitting like that, that is a handful to have to deal with. And like they were and Northwestern still scored points. So, I mean, it's all a long way of saying Northwestern, especially if Langborg suits up, but even if he doesn't, this is a confident team playing offensive basketball that's been one of the best three-point shooting teams in the nation. They can get buckets. They have multiple ways to do it. Martinelli and Barnheiser are very comfortable going into the paint and getting high percentage shots. This team can get buckets. It just, you hope for another defensive effort. But again, like I think we can be realistic about Michigan State and at the same time not give short shrift to the defense that this team has played down the stretch and been like, look, these guys are going to get it done. If Michigan State comes out and does not shoot plus 50%, Northwestern's going to be absolutely in this game with a really good chance to win it.
Do you guys want to talk briefly about Minnesota the coming weekend?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So unlike Michigan, when you match up Northwestern and Minnesota, I mean, unlike Michigan State, these two teams don't quite look alike. And this is a game.
Garcia is the problem.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. This is where the size might be a little bit of an issue, and you're really gonna need Northwestern to probably pour it in on offense in the season finale at home.
Yeah, I think the issue is right. It's going to be an absolutely raucous environment. That, you know, the place is going to be packed. It's senior night. You're going to be like sending off Boo Booey from his last game at Welsh Ryan. It's going to be a huge deal. It's going to be an electric environment. But yeah, like, I mean, and I think, you know, we're all aware of the fact that if it's Luke Hunger and Blake Preston, like there is no tested big on the roster after that. There's nothing else. There's nothing else that has played. So you look at a guy like Dawson Garcia and you'd be like, look, they've got 10 fouls across two guys with which to corral him, but there's not a lot else there. And I think with that said, like, I think we know that Northwestern, the first time they played Minnesota, lost that game early in the first half with some sloppy basketball and then furiously rallied. And but not for that sloppy stretch early on, that honestly, like, part of that was the timing and the stretch of basketball the Cats were coming off of at that time. Northwestern should have won that game. And right, if Langborg is back, and we've talked about it especially early in conference season, but as we've gone forward, this team beat Purdue. Like, it's like Zach flipping Edie. Like, some huge big guys can't be stopped no matter how many fouls you have to give them. And at some point you have to be like, look, at some point we got to trust what we do and that's going to be enough. And of course, Northwestern was so good at doing that multiple times, right? And almost had two, you know, 1-1 and almost had two games against Purdue just this season to take away from that. The Cats can play track meet basketball. And if the Cats are hitting, the Cats can be like, look, Dawson Garcia got 30 and we still won because we played our game. That applies to Michigan State too. Like, it's tough. These are hard problems to have to solve, but damn it if this team doesn't still have a ton of great scorers who can also play two-way basketball. You know, I think we all still feel really confident about their chances to take one of these.
I do want to get to our Lake the Post segment presented by Teamworks Media here. And, you know, as we talk about the historical aspect of things here, we need to pay even more homage, I believe, to number 30, Billy McKinney. You know, his jersey, you know, sent to the rafters at halftime against Iowa, and just how special that really was. And like, to Big Ten Network's credit, they showed some of the ceremony. I wish they'd have showed it all. You can go to NUSports.com and they have the entire ceremony there. Highly recommend you take a look at it. But like, this, you know, was the first, and which, you know, it's rough that it's taken this long for a jersey to be retired. It's absolutely spot on for Billy McKinney to be the first one up there. But hopefully this opens up opens the faucet a bit to maybe get a few more jerseys put up there. But like, you know, this was huge. And, you know, I don't want to take anything away from that ceremony and from that acknowledgement of what Billy McKinney has meant to the program and to basketball as a whole.
Oh, it was a phenomenal ceremony. Northwestern did a great job. It was, the whole production was absolutely befitting of the moment and befitting of the man. And I think one of the things that we talked about too was the speech that Billy McKinney gave, and that, you know, there's a lot of lip service paid to people using their platform. Well, this was a situation where someone who has used his platform so many times out, you know, throughout his remarkable life, used it again. And this was the moment that was all about him. This was a moment that was his moment to reflect on his basketball career and everything that's led to his jersey being retired. And he chose to deliver words about the importance of diversity and respecting diversity and growing diversity in our society, but just as importantly, unity, and just the idea of why are we so divided? What can be done to bring us together? Talking about like one of the things he loves about like sports is the power that it has to do that thing. And just using his moment to deliver a really important message about, you know, his hopes for society and where we can go and how we can all be better. I mean, the character of the individual, and it just made you that much more proud that his jersey was going up.
Something I did not know about Billy McKinney, when I knew he was the mayor of Zion, I knew he was, you know, a great player at Northwestern, I knew he had played in the NBA. I didn't know that he had been an executive in the NBA for many years. Assistant vice president of basketball ops for the Bulls, director of player personnel for the Timberwolves, vice president of basketball operations for the Pistons, executive VP of the Seattle Supersonics, and then the Seattle Storm. For me, Billy represents one of the things we often talk about, the difference between NU hoops and NU football, is that the success at the next level for Northwestern basketball has been next to zero. And McKinney represents a really unique figure in his connection, not just as a player, but his direct connection today to Northwestern's program and the experience he brings from such a wide range of basketball homes and places. And I think that's a really great aspect for the players on the team today. I think about the interactions that Boo has got to have with McKinney throughout the course of this year as he approached, you know, McKinney's points mark, broke it, the you know, embracing the words that they shared after that game that were, you know, captured in photos and broadcast around. I just like what a wonderful person to have as part of the Northwestern community and someone we've had the privilege to say hello to and speak to before some games. So I just like that was an aspect I wasn't aware of until I was reading all the tributes and articles leading up to the game. And I think it's great that Northwestern finally did this. There's a lot of jokes on like how quickly are we gonna raise Boo's jersey to the rafters, and maybe he'll be able to help out with some of that, you know, NBA exposure down the road. But yeah, just like a great moment for a great man, not just in Northwestern or basketball, but just overall.
Absolutely, and you mentioned football too, and it makes me think of we're very privileged within our community, and I think it speaks to Northwestern, it speaks to the quality of student athlete who comes through this school. But you mentioned football too, and I think of like Jason Wright or Napoleon Harris, right? And people, guys who were unbelievable athletes and moved on to playing at the pro level, just like Billy McKinney, and then through their own abilities, just in terms of athletics, personality, intelligence, force of will, desire to give back, etc., have gone on to so many other things, either in sports, like you were saying, you mentioned all the different executive positions Billy McKinney held. And I think of Jason Wright, like he's the president of the Washington Commanders, and Napoleon Harris has been, you know, a state senator for over a decade and finished, I think, third in the national senatorial election in the state of Illinois, right? Like these are great careers that so transcend athletics and yet feel at once like incredibly at home within the world of Northwestern athletics, just because it's like, it's so representative of the place and the kind of people. It's the kind of thing that makes us all so proud to be Northwestern sports fans.
So one thing that I was just thinking about as we were talking about this, and you know, I'm springing this on you, no time to prepare. What are the next numbers to possibly go up to the rafters in Welsh Ryan Arena?
I mean, besides zero?
yeah. But like, you know.
What's Scherna wear, 24?
You imagine, yeah, 24, I think, for Scherna. I could see that.
You know, a couple
Eschmeyer, maybe?
Could be. Couple lockdowns of Caitlin Clark in the WNBA, and maybe VB gets a jersey number raised up there.
Ooh.
Those are the obvious ones. Right. I mean, Scherna's 24. Absolutely would be on the list also.
Chernov with 24, Eschmeyer with 42. A little mirror image action there.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, those are definitely possibilities. But, I mean, I think that the zero is the one that we all have circled. Yeah.
Well, speaking of, I want to, you know, we've hit on a lot of these things throughout the course of the year, and I wanted to hit on a couple more, and those are just like the plaudits and the platitudes and the firsts that are coming through for this team. And this is something, you know, as we've been talking to Jay, he's been on this nonstop. But a couple more to add to the ledger this week. Sweeping Maryland for the first time, that was a big deal. The other one that pops up is it's the first time we've beaten Maryland, Illinois, Indiana, and Purdue all in the same season, being, you know, some of the most, you know, preeminent basketball schools in the conference. Add a victory over Michigan, a victory over Michigan State. You know, you can see where we're going. Our buddy Scott Sepich, our resident bracketologist, who we'll be excited to talk to in a few weeks' time here, dropped a great stat on Twitter.
Really brought us back to our happy college time.
Brought us back to it. Like Sam and I used to do shots of Pepsi with Scott every time the Cats hit a three-pointer in games back in basketball, the halcyon days of basketball band. But
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Scott commented that in the 1990s, Northwestern won a total of 26 Big Ten games. And in the last 2 years, they've won 23 Big Ten games. So maybe like it's possible they can match that mark over the course of the next 2 weeks. We'll see what happens. But it's just, you know, again, we're in a very, you know, rare and incredible period. Like injury luck and some of the things we're worried about notwithstanding, it's still an amazing, amazing time to be a Northwestern basketball fan. And then I want to end on some boo-boo-y stats. And I know, John, I'm going to tee you up for something here in a sec on Boo as well. But I talked about Boo's standing in the all-time Big Ten scoring ranks last podcast. I figure we'll make this a weekly bit. Boo has moved up two spots to number 28 after the last two games. He has passed Mike Woodson, the current coach of Indiana. In the next couple games, you've got Dennis Hobson, A.J. Guyton, a name that I recognize from our college days, playing in Indiana, Vashawn Leonard, Roy Marble. These are the next players kind of on the list ahead of Boo. If he can have a good couple games here, he'll be into the top 25, and then we'll look in the Big Ten tournament for him breaking into the top 20, where he'd pass players such as Etuan Moore, Ethan Happ, and Scott Skiles, name from back in the day for those of you who follow the former Bulls coach.
Or even, yeah, I'm going to date myself here, NBA Jam, Scott Skiles and Shaq.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. That deserves. Yeah. I'm going to sip my scotch now.
With that, let's mention that the Like the Post segment was brought to you by Teamworks Media. And if you are looking to enhance your company's brand story, contact Jay at jay@teamworksmedia.com or call him at 312-446-9435. Jay, thank you once again for your support of the podcast.
So one other thing we want to mention before we got off hoops, and I should have mentioned it earlier, but all the talk about Boo reminded me of it, and it's very important to bring up. And it's very important to bring up as we talk about potentially the amount of points Boo would need to score to move up some of these, up this ladder that Scuzz is talking about here. Well then, let me tell you, one thing I wouldn't want to be if I was Michigan State or I was Minnesota was to catch Boo Booey the week he was left off the Bob Cousy Award finalists list. Because it's so effing ridiculous. We're all so mad about it. This is the best guard in the Big Ten, and he is not the Big Ten's representative on this list. That would be a guard from a school that is ranked in the top three in the country. But oh yes, Boo beat that team twice and missed a runner that would have won him three straight games over Purdue. Dominated them. So we are all mad. But more importantly, does Boo Booey strike you as the kind of person who's not going to take this very personally? And you are going to get an angry Boo Booey in these last two games. And I think it's, we talk about all these accolades and we talk about like what's Northwestern's path, best path through these past two. What about the best guard in the Big Ten and the best basketball player in Northwestern history, most likely, just plays out of his effing mind for the next two games? How about that? Right? And again, this is a guy who holds grudges. This is a guy who takes things personally. And I think you're going to get apex Boo Booey for the next two games.
Well, we shall see. Like we say,
here's Wednesday hoping.
Night. Yeah, absolutely. Wednesday night at Michigan State, and then Saturday evening, finishing up the regular season at home against the Gophers. If you or a loved one is seriously injured by someone else's negligence, hire Kent Simpson of the Simpson Law Group. After over a decade prosecuting murder cases in Chicago, Simpson opened his own firm focused on wrongful death and personal injury cases. He specializes in car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and other transportation accidents, as well as construction accidents, medical negligence, slip and falls, product liability, and more. Millions recovered for clients. No fee unless he wins. The Simpson Law Group. Compassion, empathy, and vigorous advocacy. Go to SimpsonLawGroup.com or call 312-332-2107 for a free consultation. And go Cats! Turning our attention to the spring sports, we had a couple.
I mean, boy, any other time we'd be leading with this. It's just where we are.
So lacrosse goes out to Chestnut Hill and does to BC what they did to them in the national championship game last year on a neutral floor or neutral field. This time, in their house, on a cold, windy night in Boston, takes down number one Boston College 14-11 and is now sitting as the number one, has retaken their slot as number one team in the country.
This was their best performance of the season, and it was the arrival of the team. I mean, only a 3-goal win. They never trailed on the road against the number one team in the country. And again, the Cats have rightfully regained their place at the top, but this was the kind of performance that did that. And it's like, you know, they had the road bump against Notre Dame, and it definitely led to us on the pod being like, dang, and look at this schedule. It doesn't get any easier. And this team's just like, yeah, but we are the monster. We are the Death Star. And we will roll in and blow up every one of these planets. And I mean, it was Skane, it was Kuykendall, it was Taylor, it was just this powerhouse core of this team, and they did it. I mean, did they dominate? I mean, not in the way that they did against Central Michigan just now. But
I mean
like,
they were up 7-2 after the first quarter. So.
Right, but I mean, it's like, what more do you want? They went into the number one team in the country's house and won convincingly. Like, you can't do it better.
Pretty much. I like there's no higher ask, right? Than what you just described, John. So like, obviously, like the schedule does not ease up. but they're back where they were at the beginning of the season and looking like the total, you know, fully operational battle station that they are. The Stars are performing, and it's going to be a fun ride. This team is so flipping good, and they're stacked across the board. Getting punched in the mouth by Notre Dame early on was probably the best thing that could have happened to them.
Just like last year when they lost that game early on to Syracuse.
Yeah, the opener to Syracuse, and they're a group on a mission right now.
And that mission was to beat the ever-loving Tar out of Central Michigan.
I mean, we definitely saw someone on Twitter being like, I didn't know you could score that many goals in a lacrosse game. And it's like, yep, yeah, 27, and honestly, the Cats were throttling down as much as you can in the second half. It's like when a team scores 80 in a football game, and you're like, those a-holes, and it's like, well, they were playing their third string for the whole second half. At some point, there's like, what else can you do? Northwestern has so much talent that you're going to have a mismatch like that,
the last goal scored by, like, one of the, you know, we'll call them Northwestern regulars, and that's not to take anything away from any of the other women that scored thereon, but Lindsay Frank scored a goal with 2 seconds left in the second period. A woman down, I might add. Northwestern was shorthanded in this moment. And then they scored 10 more goals in the second half by basically young players that haven't been part of the regular rotation. Certainly not, you know, typically notching the score sheet. That's the kind of dominance that was on display.
I think so, to like rewinding to briefly to highlight, because we're going to mention Izzy Skane and Kuykendall, and, you know, we'll get to, you know, the accolades that they've been gobbling up in a second. One name I specifically wanted to reference, though, is Samantha Smith. We obviously talk plenty about the importance of draw controls, and man, particularly against Boston College, did it ever feel like Sam Smith was coming up with clutch draw controls down the stretch for that team? And I just found myself getting kind of addicted to seeing her get a draw control and get Northwestern possession, and then just like pump her fist afterwards and being like, hell yeah. And being like, this is like, when Northwestern's rolling like that, you just get so jacked up. And then, yeah, I know. Obviously, like, we already did our historical segment, but there's lacrosse delivered plenty of history this week too.
Yeah, so Kuykendall and Skane both hit major points milestones this weekend. Kuykendall got to her 300th career point. Skane broke the 400 point barrier at 401, and with her 399th point, she became the all-time points leader for Northwestern. She's already the all-time goals leader for Northwestern. And as I've pointed out on Twitter, is chasing the all-time scoring mark for women's college lacrosse. She sits at 310 goals today. She needs 48 goals to tie the mark set by Charlotte North 2 years ago of Boston College, I might add. At a four goals per game clip. She's averaging slightly under that right now, but averaged, you know, 5 and 6 goals a game the last 2 years. She would get to that mark roughly around the Big Ten championship or beginning of the NCAA tournament. So obviously a lot needs to go right for that to come through. This is, you know, no layup or gimme or given, but the opportunity is quite plausible for Izzy Skane to set some major history come the end of this season.
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely keep track of that as we move through the season. Have you ever thought about building a Westlaw Pirates-like community for your business? If so, we've got your solution. Teamworks Media, a brand marketing and content company, is here to help you tell your brand story better. Better yet, you can work directly with the founder, Jay Sharman, known on this podcast as Lake Posts. The same expertise he's brought to brands like ESPN, the Big Ten Conference, and Northwestern University are now available to you in an affordable way, directly with this Wildcat superfan. Contact Jay directly at 312-446-9435 or jay@teamworksmedia.com to learn how to elevate your brand story. And finally tonight, let's talk softball. Cats went down to Auburn, Alabama, to take on Auburn and North Texas, in a, four games there. Night one was rained out, but, man, just like out in, at the Mary Nutter, the bats just were not there those first two games. 7-0 loss to North Texas and a 1-0 loss to Auburn.
Yeah, it's the second weekend in a row that the Cats have started with two games where they didn't plate any runs. And they rebounded with the, the 9-3 win over North Texas to close the weekend out. But a huge part of that game, if you dig into the stats, was Northwestern getting a ton of runners on via bases on balls. Ton of walks. They put a ton of runners on. They had 5 hits in the game. I mean, so you look at 9 runs, but 9 runs on only 5 hits. Like, the bats are, these past two weekends, the Cats, who, as we talked about it last week, and I think Scuzz brought it up last week, like, the weekend before, it was explosive. Like, a couple just really monster offensive performances. And then the bats have really gone quiet. And I think because of that, you've kind of got, a couple unbelievable Ashley Miller pitching performances that she's taken losses in. I mean, Ashley Miller had these two games, once against a ranked UCLA team and then this weekend against a ranked Auburn team, where she, I think, combined for 16 strikeouts in those two games, pitched two complete games, so 12 innings of work, didn't get the chance to pitch in the seventh in both of them. But pitched 12 total innings, 16 strikeouts, gave up only 5 total hits across both games, or 6 total hits across both games, gave up 2 total runs, and took 2 1-0 losses. So, I mean, on one hand, to know you got an ace like that right after losing Danielle Williams is phenomenal. But yeah, the Cats are searching for the bats. They, hopefully we'll get this straightened out and get some players heated up as the Cats pivot into conference play here.
Heading down to Columbia, South Carolina this weekend to take on NC State, Boston University, Minnesota, and South Carolina. Now, wait, weren't we supposed to play USC upstate? Weren't they were on the schedule at one point.
Were they part of the Auburn rainout? No, I don't know.
No. The Auburn, I thought that because it's South Carolina upstate.
After we worked so hard to figure out the location of this place, that game's been removed from the schedule.
Come on.
It was supposed to be this past weekend. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
but never mind.
Yeah. So anyway, I think we should focus on the fact that the Cats are getting, and then, Riley Grudzelanic pitched really well against North Texas to end the weekend. And it's like, the Cats have gotten great pitching. They have gotten explosive offense. It's just finding the consistency right now.
Anything else to mention before we get out of here tonight, guys?
One other little thing I just wanted to close on, and it takes back to lacrosse. And obviously, so many things going, and with such a special week for Billy McKinney and everything going on in hoops, it'd be easier to find something with hoops. But I'll go back to lacrosse. So after this absolute massacre of Central Michigan, Northwestern did a full autograph session for all of the kids in attendance. And just watching some video of it, and specifically watching Izzy Skane. And we talked about this with softball. There is the how heartwarming it is to watch things like this, and also the power of moments like this, the power for a brand and the power in how much kids will take away moments like these, and some of these moments may define their whole lives. But watching Izzy Skane taking the time out, particularly this interaction with this one little girl who you could see was just dumbstruck, right? I mean, this is maybe the greatest women's lacrosse player in history. Like, and being so sweet and loving with this girl, and taking all the time for her, and, oh, hey, that's so nice to meet you. Oh, hey, with that giant, smile that we all know from Izzy Skane. And it's just like, it's just awesome. Like, it just makes, it's just, you love stuff like that. It all really matters, and it really matters for a program, but it's also just wonderful to see.
I also do want to shout out Caitlin Clark. with two shots from the stripe, passes Pete Maravich for the all-time leading scorer in college basketball history. Men or women.
And now she's going to the league. Get it out now, Caitlin, because VB's waiting for you. She's waiting for you in the league.
I've been reading a lot about the Caitlin Clark stuff, which is just, it's just, she's incredible. She's the only player. So obviously she's number one all time in points. She's also number four all time in assists.
Wow.
It's like a Gretzky line. It's like unbelievable.
There is no other player even remotely close. And the article I was reading today was really about her vision for the game, her ability to find her player, her teammates, her ability to read defenses. It's just unparalleled. It is not just that she's a dead eye shooter. It is her entire offensive game is elite. She has tied Steph Curry for the most 3-pointers in a college career, I believe with 162, maybe wow. more than that. Maravich, she broke Maravich's record, which, you know, some people have been throwing shade at because, oh, well, there was no 3-point line, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Maravich took 600 more shot attempts and 260 more free throw attempts than Caitlin Clark. So, like, 3-point line or not, the efficiency difference is pretty stark there. And I just, like, again, we've never seen anything like her in the game. She's just amazing. And for anyone who finds themselves like wanting to chirp or argue, like, shut up and just enjoy it. Enjoy this transcendental generational player. Just enjoy it. Be happy.
Yep.
And can you imagine if the Indiana Fever fire up the Stranger Things jersey?
Let it be so. Take my money if that happens.
Yeah, you mentioned the Indiana Fever. You know, there's a really awesome sports business story coming out of this whole thing that, you know, would have been great if people, like, focused on sports business would have highlighted this. But Indiana Fever ticket sales have gone through the roof since Clark announced that she was going pro. And I think you're going to see a similar effect that Steph Curry had on the NBA, where the appetite to buy tickets to just see Steph Curry when he came to town and the show that he would put on. I think Caitlin Clark's going to be the exact same thing in the WNBA. And it's going to be awesome for that league. It's going to be awesome for fans of that league. It's going to be awesome for just basketball fans who want to experience, you know, something really unique and incredible. So hats off to Caitlin Clark. I don't care that she played for Iowa. Yes, I hate Iowa, but she's freaking phenomenal.
Yeah, and you mentioned it earlier, John, the opportunity for a Veronica Burton Caitlin Clark matchup. That's going to be appointment viewing.
Let's go.
Clark herself has said that nobody ever guarded her tougher than the backcourt burglar.
I think that calls for a neutral court Dallas Indiana matchup in Welsh Ryan Arena. That's what I think. That's all I'm saying.
Well, with that, we'll go ahead and leave it there for tonight. Head to our website, westlawpirates.com, where you can leave comments and questions. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Westlaw Pirates, and email the show, westlawpirates@gmail.com. Tune in next time as we give our visceral and statistical views on Northwestern athletics. And look for us in the Westlaw Ryan Field flying the red pirate flag, because we give no quarter, especially the fourth. For John Lacombe and Eric Skazbo, I'm Sam Walter. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.